Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 96-year-old Melvin Gablehouse of Modesto, California. Gabe, as he's known to the neighbors and friends who continue to enjoy his baking talents. More on that later. But when we left off, he had told us about his experience as part of a Navy Armed Guard contingent on the merchant ship SS Samuel Q. Brown. That ship left New Orleans with 80,000 barrels of Navy No. 6 fuel oil. 2 days later, while passing through the Yucatan Channel, it was spotted by a German submarine, U-103, which stalked it for a couple of hours before firing two torpedoes, which both missed. A second attempt hours later, though, is what woke up 16-year-old Gabe Gablehouse. The explosion from the torpedo killed two men instantly and set the ship on fire. And Gabe mentioned being interviewed by the Lincoln Journal-Star while home on leave in Nebraska right after that ordeal. That article is accessible online. It's from June 11, 1942, and under the headline, Lincoln Sailor Sorry to See His Merchant Vessel Sink. It reads, his ship, an oil tanker out of New Orleans, was torpedoed amidships on Saturday night, May 23rd, while Melvin was asleep forward on the second deck. The torpedo tore off the first deck all the way across on top, he said. It took just 20 seconds for 48 men aboard the ship to lower into two undamaged lifeboats and get clear of the ship, according to Melvin. Three sailors were killed in the attack. One fell victim of a shark after he jumped. Three others were burned badly by flaming oil and are now in the hospital. The men in the boats were questioned by members of the sub crew, quote, who spoke better English than I do, Melvin said. They asked a lot of questions, but all they could get out of us was the name of the ship, which was hard for the commander to understand. Quite the experience there for a 16-year-old.
So how did you feel about going back aboard a ship after that?
No problem. Went right back out and caught another ship. As a matter of fact, we came back home on the Yarmouth. Brought us back to New Orleans. Gave us 30 days leave. Went home, come back, right back out on another ship.
So I guess you got to celebrate your 17th birthday on your next ship, or can you not celebrate a 17th birthday when you're supposed to be older than that?
I don't remember birthdays. No.
And what kind of ship were you on next?
My next ship out, we hauled sulfur, stinking stuff. And we picked that up and brought it back. I got off of that ship. I went on to another ship. We went up all the way up the Amazon River, almost as far as you could go, and picked up a load of, they call them Chitoya nuts. I don't know what the hell that is, but that's what it was. And after that, we was on a ship called Abraham Baldwin. On that one, we went around the Straits, South Sandal, Chile.
So you went all the way down to the southern tip of South America.
Yeah.
And, not to interrupt, but you said you went almost all the way down the Amazon River.
Yeah.
I haven't met too many Navy guys who got to do that.
No.
Of course, this is a merchant ship still.
Right.
Yeah. What kind of stuff did you see on that Amazon cruise there?
Just river and trees and shacks. That was it all the way up. People come out and wave at you once in a while when they see you.
No piranhas?
No piranhas. I'm sure they were there. But our business was to go up and pick it up and get out.
So if I'm counting right, the Abraham Baldwin, by that time you've already been on four different ships as an armed guard, and now you go all the way down around the tip of South America to come back around. You're kind of seeing a lot of the world as a young man, aren't you?
Even ended up in Tahiti on that ship. And we had a burial at sea on that ship.
What happened?
Some guy died.
Not enemy action or anything?
No. Just burial at sea. And after that, I got out of there altogether. I really wanted a Navy ship. But I ended up, went to an outfit called Acorn 28. And then we went from there to Port Hueneme, which is in California, which was nothing there at that time, but tents. We lived in tents. And from there, we caught a ship and went to the Admiralty Islands out in the South Pacific. And that's where I finished the war out there.
Well, a couple of things come to mind here. When you say, you wanted something different altogether, you wanted a Navy ship. Were you starting to realize that being an armed guard on a merchant ship wasn't that safe, or did it have to do with, what was it?
No, I just wanted to get back in the fleet. You had reserve, yep, Navy and the regular Navy.
Uh-huh.
I was regular Navy, and I wanted to get in with the fleet, catch a destroyer or a cruiser or something like that where I could been down to sea for a long time.
And I'm curious what it was like on those merchant ships, because you have merchant seamen and then you have these Navy sailors. Did you guys get along okay?
Oh, yeah. Ate good? Yeah. Good chow, yeah. Oh, yeah. All good.
So you wanted to get into the fleet, and they put you in Acorn 28. Now, some people might not know what an Acorn unit is. Explain that to us.
It's a outfit that during the war went overseas in islands. They had islands all over out in the South Pacific. What we would do out there is when the planes from the carriers would go fight and get shot up, they wouldn't go back to the carrier. They would land on the island, and we'd fix the planes, patch them, fix them back up, send them back to the carriers. That's what that was all about.
So you guys were a Navy flyer's best friend.
Oh, yeah. Fix them up, send them back.
So you practiced that a little bit at Port Hueneme?
Not that part of it, no. What you've practiced there was, just a little bit of everything. Motor pools where they kept all the heavy equipment. The boat pool where they had the boats.
And then you said you got sent to the Admiralty Islands. So, again, a lot of people listen and say, okay, Admiralty Islands. I don't know where that is. Tell us.
Out in the South Pacific, yeah. There's maybe four islands, a main island, which was Manus Island, and I was on Island Petilu. Then there was about two or three more islands that I don't even remember that they manned the same way. Yeah, the British took that over. All we did was went in, cleaned up, built an airstrip, dug a well, put out a bunch of pots over the ocean, over the bay, and called it home.
That's what I want to understand. That had to be a pretty unique place to spend the rest of the war. How long total do you think you were there?
I think I went over there in maybe the latter part of 43 and stayed until the war ended in 45. As a matter of fact, where I was at on the Admiralty Islands, when the war was about to come to an end, more or less, all the ships in the fleet came to the Admiralty Islands and was getting ready to invade Japan. And that's when they dropped the bomb.
But you've been there a while before that, and as again, I try to imagine what this must be like. So you and the rest of these guys in Acorn 28, you're kind of making something out of nothing. How many people do you think you had in that unit?
Probably 200-300 people. You had mechanics and a lot of aviation people, and boat pool people, motor pool people, communications people.
And you had to pretty much build anything you wanted to use?
It had to be built. Quonset huts, yeah. We all carried rifles all the time, and we had an airplane to come over every morning. Some gal in there, Tokyo Road, over the loudspeaker every morning, said, "We know you're down there. We know what you're doing." Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
Didn't pay no attention to her. could have shot. We weren't allowed to.
That sounds like an awfully interesting way for a teenager to live. Yeah. What were some of the pros and cons?
Well, let's see. For the time, everything was pretty good. You know, everything was, a lot of everything was rationed to you, but you had everything, except, you know, your dental and stuff like that was terrible. You needed a dental organ. There wasn't no teeth filling, it was pulled.
With no anesthesia?
Oh, you had anesthesia, yeah. And washing my teeth was in school with no anesthesia, you know.
I was going to say, yeah, it sounds like that's something you experienced personally. You had to have some teeth pulled there?
Oh, yeah, I had a problem with my teeth quite a bit, yeah.
Did you get to get out and explore much of that island?
Oh, yeah. We'll go around it every day. Only one a mile long, half a mile wide, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had things happening every day. It was a big bay that had a lot of ships in there every day. And as a matter of fact, I'll tell you about a ship that came in there one morning. Was it in the morning that ship came in? USS Mount Hood was an ammunition ship. It came into the bay to keep them in a different area. They pulled in there and they anchored and they lowered the boats and the boats pulled away from the ship. They would go over to the Manus Island to pick up mail and stuff like that. The ship was there 1 minute, next minute it was gone. Blew up.
And you were there to see that?
I was out on the dock. I watched it happen. I just said, "Hey, a ship came in last night." I looked over there, gone.
That had to be quite a loud boom.
Yeah. It was terrible.
You could probably feel that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure you could.
And was that a situation where there's not a whole lot you can do to help anybody?
Nothing. The only people who made it off there was the guys that went to get the mail. LCMs lowered, and it was not a pretty picture.
Yeah, and I don't want to be melodramatic, but I'm just imagining, again, still being a teenager. Yeah. And that's hard to witness.
Yeah, well, you grow up in a hurry.
And anyone who has ever seen a photograph of that USS Mount Hood explosion knows how devastating this was. I'll post one of those photos at hometownheroesradio.com and on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. 350 men were vaporized in an instant, and 22 smaller craft in the area were sunk, destroyed, or sustained so much damage they couldn't be repaired. Another 371 sailors from other ships in the harbor were hurt. It was a devastating tragedy on November 10th, 1944, that would be blamed basically on careless handling of ammunition. Let's talk about something more pleasant, Gabe. I saw a photo that you have from there in the Admiralty Islands of some pretty famous entertainers that came through. It sure looked like Frances Langford, who I'm sure was singing I'm in the Mood for Love, and that guy next to her in the photo is perhaps the most famous of all the USO performers during World War II.
Well, Bob Hope.
Well, and Bob Hope entertained so many troops in so many places in the war. Can you help us understand what that meant to you guys to have someone like him show up and put on that show?
Oh, sure. It was entertaining, and, you know, it took your mind off a lot of things, you know. Yeah. He did a good show.
And I see you have a photo of some pretty good-sized fish you caught when you were living there on the Admiralty Islands.
Yes. Barracuda. Did a lot of all hand-lining. Put bait on it and throw it out. Used to do a lot of that after work.
Where would you catch them?
Right off the pier. The barracuda would chase in the base of the pier and take a hand grenade and drop it down in there and get the bait.
Hand grenade fishing.
Hand grenade fishing, yeah.
I don't think I've never tried that myself, certainly. Well, what did the barracuda taste like?
Very good meat. It's good meat. Barracuda is good meat. All white, like sturgeon.
Okay, so you're part of Acorn 28, but what was your specific job within that? What did you get to do?
I was in the motor pool for quite a while, and then I transferred from the motor pool to the boat pool, run a boat down. I had a boat, what they call a rearming boat. I would run people around the different boats, different ships and stuff like that. A lot of the captains and stuff off the ships, they'd go to different ships and have parties and stuff like that. I would run them.
So you were kind of the chauffeur for the big brass?
More or less, yeah. Yeah, rather, yeah, you can call it that.
I'm just thinking you might have had some memorable interactions in those instances.
Yeah, no, just do your job.
And you mentioned earlier the significance of having a place where some of these planes off the carriers could land, get fixed up. Did you ever get a sense for how important that was, how significant that was in the bigger picture?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They couldn't go back to the ship, so they had to be prepared somewhere and left to get back to the ship and then go out and do what they're supposed to do. Do their bombing, and whatever they had to do. Bring the war to an end, yeah.
And was that pretty much a constant stream of those guys?
Yeah, every day. Yeah, every day. They go out and get shot up.
And you got to see some of those?
Oh, yeah, all the time, yeah.
I guess that makes me wonder, when you see every day there's a shot-up plane coming in, and these guys are all out there, and you know those are the lucky ones who didn't go in the drink, what kind of impression you were left with of who those guys were and what they were all about?
They were doing their job, doing what they're supposed to do.
And how about the weather? Because they have typhoons in the South Pacific.
Yeah, they had bad weather sometimes. It was hot all the time. Didn't bother you. Get used to it.
Did you ever hear from home?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we all, yeah. Everything was censored. All the letters censored. Couldn't tell where he was at.
And you were there when news came that the bombs had been dropped, and that the war was over? What do you remember about those moments where that's some pretty big news coming to where you are?
Yeah, just to get ready to go home. All regular Navy. Just get ready, you're going to go home. That's what we did. Came here to California to Camp Shoemaker.
Did you have a decision to make as far as staying in or getting out?
You know, the question was always asked, you know, what are you going to do? Well, I knew what I was going to do.
Which was stay in the Navy for 20 years. And there were many more adventures to come for Gabe Gablehouse. It's the Navy's fault he met his wife. We'll hear how that happened. And also what he did that caused the Secretary of the Navy to issue a commendation. Two lives were saved as a result. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos and a short video with Mr. Gablehouse, and we'll be right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.